Grace to you and peace from the one who creates and redeems and sustains all things. Amen. Today we engage in kind of a strange text. During a strange time. This week has been, for some of us, a week of great joy mixed with great sadness. During the week, there were the funerals of those who were gunned down in their worship space by one of our own. Turns out, and I didn't find this out until actually last week after our service, that Dylan Roof, who was the alleged shooter in the horrible church massacre, was a member of one of our own churches. He was an ELCA person. He went to church and to Bible camp, Bible school. His father was active in their congregation. And somehow, something went terribly, terribly wrong. In the aftermath of all of that, I happened to be just trolling the news, as often I do. And I ended up on a British news site. Actually, it was the Mirror, Daily Mirror, which can be argued whether or not that's actually a news site. But in there, I read through the story, which was mostly just a kind of pulling together of facts. But what I'm always interested in is what are the comments at the end. So I scrolled down to the comments, and one after another talked about, well, what do you expect when you raise people in a fundamentalist Christian household? And I thought for a second now, how did they arrive at that conclusion? That this young man who had been raised in what for many people is considered to be among the most liberal of the Lutheran faiths and one of the most liberal and accepting branches of Christianity had been raised in a hate-filled fundamentalist church that had trained him to be intolerant and racist and hateful. How did they come to that conclusion? Believe it or not, through the gospel. It's part of our name. As soon as they saw the word Evangelical Lutheran Church in America, they already knew some kind of crazy cultic snake waving, water throwing, fundamentalist, racist bunch of people going around the world spreading hate. All because of the word evangelical. Which, if you've been around me very long, you know is simply a Greek word, euangelion, that only means one thing. Good news. It's the word, euangelion, that we get the word gospel from. We are the church of the good news. It seemed strange to me, having learned that one of our own, as Bishop Eaton put it, one of our own committed this terrible crime, that in the face of the world, the excuse was he was over-religious. It's a strange way to think about the world. And I certainly understand the impetus. I understand the ignorance. I understand that people would not take the 30 seconds that it takes to find out what the Evangelical Lutheran Church in America is all about. But it highlights how people think about the church sometimes in this day and age. And they ignore the gospel, which is our root and our history and our present and our hope. You see, in the end, we are not a faith based on doctrine or ideals, but on a word that we experience most clearly and powerfully in the gospel lesson for today. And that word is grace. That grace came to a woman who had suffered from a hemorrhage. Have you explained it to her yet? Let me know how that goes. She'd been bleeding for years. And, you know, as you know anything about Jewish culture and about the ancient culture, during the time of a woman's menstruation, she is considered unclean. She cannot participate in worship. She cannot be touched. To touch a woman who is in her menstruation is to become unclean. I know you didn't expect to hear that in church, did you? Say it like it is. So she had become ostracized, almost certainly, from society. She could not have done all of the things that maybe she would have been able to do, even not being a Jewish woman. And she sees the healer. She sees this one named Jesus and thinks to herself, if I can just touch the hem of his robe, I will be healed. So there is Jesus pressed in around the crowd as they came around him, and he feels the power go out from him, and she is healed. This affliction of many years suddenly disappeared. She felt within herself that she had become whole again. It's interesting because the word that's used for she was healed is the exact same word that's used elsewhere for she has been saved. Sozo. She had been saved in that moment. And I love Jesus' reaction. My New Testament professor said that the word means the sweeping gaze of Jesus. It says that he looked around. Jesus is ticked. He looks around and he wonders, who in the heck has done this? Who has taken my power? And the disciples look at him like he's crazy. Jesus, did you notice that there are a whole bunch of people around you? Everyone is touching you. How are we supposed to know who this is? Jesus heals her without meaning to, without requiring of her that she recite all of her confirmation documents, that she confess the Apostles' Creed and the Nicene Creed, and if she was really holy, the Athanasian Creed as well. He doesn't require of her a test of faith to be sure that she is worthy of healing. He simply, it just comes out of him. And she is saved. Nothing but grace. Your faith has made you whole again, he tells her. Not because you deserve it, not because you are one of my disciples, not because you have made your confession, not because you're a good Christian tithing person, not because you are part of the right church or a holy place, but because you are you. And you are healed. This happens on his way to save Jairus' daughter. If you remember earlier in Mark, what was Jesus' relationship with the leaders of the synagogue? Not that great. They were, in fact, plotting against him. And Jairus, one of the leaders of the synagogue, comes to him and says, come and see my daughter. She's ill. And Jesus goes, and there's this little excursus of the woman with the hemorrhage. Arrives, what's happened to her? She's dead. like, tell Jesus to go away. He doesn't need to be here. And Jesus says, she's not dead. She's just sleeping. And the professional mourners who had been there a few seconds ago, wailing and gnashing of teeth and all that stuff. By the way, when I die, I want professional mourners. 8:15 hour. But as soon as Jesus says that, they break into laughter. What a moron. Come on. She's dead. Don't you know that? She is not dead. She is only asleep. And he kicks everybody out except her parents and James and John. And they go in there. And he says to her these incredible words, Talitha, come. Talitha, cum. And she arises, and she is well. The synagogue official with whom Jesus had already been arguing, this synagogue official who wanted to follow the rules, this person that Jesus probably did not necessarily have a great relationship, and yet Jesus does not say to him, look, I will heal your daughter if you will lay off for 2 weeks. Or let's have a discussion about your understanding of the resurrection. And if we can get that straightened out, we'll sign a contract. I'll heal your daughter. It is just grace. And she is healed. That is the nature of what it is to be the people of the gospel. To find in Jesus Christ the one who brings healing to our deepest hurts and joys. Whose sozo, whose healing is our salvation. Apart from what we deserve or confess, or maybe even in spite of it. We are a people of God's grace. Drenched in it, washed with it in the waters of baptism, consuming it in bread and wine and fellowship, and if you're Lutheran, coffee, preferably black. The way to healing is simply to be embraced by that grace. I saw that so clearly this weekend. When in spite of all of the madness and all of the racism that happened there on that day in that church, there was forgiveness. Deep and powerful forgiveness. From people who had every right to be angry. To say this is in God's hands. And to call on God's people, all people, to treat each other in a new and powerful way, not based on race or religion, but on the love of God. And I would bet that there are very few people who would have predicted that one day the President of the United States would stand up in the middle of a service and sing Amazing Grace and do it well. Watch the video about who looks the most surprised in that video. The pastors who are sitting around in their vestments are sitting right behind the president, and he starts to sing, and they look at each other like, what the heck is going on? Is he doing what I, and he's going to keep doing it. And he sang God's grace for the healing of the nations. In that moment, we touched the hem of Jesus' robe, and we are saved. As if the weekend couldn't get any better. On my birthday, for the second time, I got good news. It's funny to me. I've been working for marriage equality for 25 years. And on my birthday, the Supreme Court, there's a lot the Supreme Court does that I think is really kind of weird, but they sort of agreed with me on my birthday. They didn't mention me, which I thought. but for my gay and lesbian and transgendered friends who have for years loved one another and cared for one another deeply, it was touching the hem of Jesus' robe and being healed in that moment. They are saved. We are the Evangelical Lutheran Church, and we are part of this evangelical, gospel-centered movement that proclaims Christ crucified and calls for change. Certainly, the way to healing is to be embraced by grace. But that way comes not just through legislation or through incredible funerals, but through hard work. It is only, as our president said, when we adopt a way of being in the world that calls for definitive and clear change in how we think of another and the world that grace and again and again and again. For this church, 20-some-odd years ago, we decided we would be welcoming to all. In other places, they have made clear and credible witness that racism will not be tolerated, but love embraced. So what will we need to do to be embraced by that grace? I think the only way for that to happen is for us to live that very grace that is the grace of God. To live it in every moment, in how we interact with one another and how we see one another. It's easy to be liberal and nice when things are going well. But even in myself, with years of training and self-discipline and prayer, when someone goes to run me off the road, which seems to happen with some regularity here in Hawaii, even my brain immediately goes to places I don't want it to go. It's in the moments of stress and anger that we most need to lift up the gospel. The way to bring healing is to live the very grace that we profess. And we need to do it not only now, but also into the future. We are not done yet. And we have not arrived. I don't know that we ever will. But God continues to abide in God's church and in God's world, calling us to proclaim this life of grace, to live it out, and maybe even something deeper. It may be that for us in the future, we not only need to just proclaim God's grace and to live God's grace, but also to be God's grace. To have it be so much a part of our DNA and our identity and our communication that it becomes not only what we are, but who we are. To celebrate the depth of God's creation in new and powerful ways. That when our, in Lamentations it says, that even when our mouth is in the dust, we can proclaim God's name. Everywhere around us, there are signs of hope and despair. A little while ago, 9 people were killed in a random moment, and it seemed as if there could be no hope. But we know that as we crowd in around Jesus, we touch the hem of his robe, and by sheer powerful grace, we are healed. And may we be a healing for the world. Amen.